Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Christine Herman. Now that Illinois has become the 11th state to legalize recreational cannabis, you may be wondering, how will life be different now? Our next guest may be able to help us see into the future a bit. Her name's Anne-Marie Awad. She's the host of the new podcast, On Something, from Colorado Public Radio and PRX. It's all about life after legalization. Colorado legalized recreational cannabis 6 years ago, and in her podcast, Anne-Marie has been talking to people about how their lives have been affected, also providing some interesting perspective on the history of cannabis in the U.S. Anne-Marie, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So with Colorado, as I mentioned, being 6 years ahead in terms of legalization of cannabis, there's a lot we may be able to learn about what's on the horizon for us here in Illinois. But before we get into all of that, I wanted to first learn about your podcast, On Something. What's the idea behind it?
So the idea was that we felt like there was definitely a space for public media to step in and help people make sense out of what in the heck was going on with marijuana legalization.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because public radio stations are good at this kind of thing. They're good at taking a big issue that affects people in lots of different states and sort of breaking it down piece by piece and looking at all the different facets. And so originally, I actually didn't even pitch this thing as a podcast. I maybe pitched it more as like a traditional sort of like, let's get a reporter here in Colorado, let's get somebody in Washington State, let's get somebody in California and kind of cover this from all sides. Moving to a podcast, I think, was really great in the sense that it allowed us to look at things, you know, for 20 minutes rather than 4 or 5 on the radio.
And we Absolutely.
We can spend a whole 20 minutes kind of talking about how integral legalization was for the LGBTQ community in the 80s and 90s. That's stuff that we can't get away with as much on the radio.
Yeah.
And I think the more that we sort of looked into the topic ourselves, me especially as just a reporter, it did start to feel like maybe a more experimental medium would be a better way to tell these stories.
And there really is so much to explore, and I love that there's so much storytelling. Like, listening to this podcast, I felt like I met so many people whose lives have been affected, and I want to introduce our listeners to some of them here as well. But what I also really appreciated was that you started off by going way back in history. I wonder if, briefly, you can take us back decades ago, remind us, how did cannabis wind up an illegal substance in the first place?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. So at the turn of the 20th century, cannabis was something that was in a lot of medicine cabinets, and it was called cannabis because that was the scientific name for it. And it was a household medicine in the same way that a lot of other substances that are now super duper illegal were household substances. And so you had medicines that contained like opium and alcohol that were marketed to kids. At some point, we started to realize that maybe that wasn't a great thing. And we passed regulations in this country to require manufacturers to truthfully label everything that was on their ingredients list. Those types of medicines really took a hit after that. In the 1930s, marijuana becomes illegal at the federal level effectively for the first time. And that happens for a couple of different reasons. Not everybody like agrees on why, but some would argue, and kind of we have an historian in our podcast who argues this, that, you know, the prohibition era was sort of winding down. And there's a certain guy who was running the Bureau of Prohibition, Henry Anslinger, who kind of needed to make a career change, right? Prohibition was going out of style. Alcohol was going to become legal again. And so he kind of moved on to targeting marijuana, people who use marijuana and people who sell marijuana. So in 1937, we passed what's called the Marijuana Tax Act, which says that possessing marijuana without a tax stamp to show that you paid taxes on it was illegal and that you can go to prison. And actually, the first couple of guys arrested under this law were arrested right here in Denver. Then after that, sort of throughout history, you kind of see these like cyclical patterns where every few decades, states start to decriminalize a little bit. And then, as the other historian we talked to kind of said, there are these cycles where something happens to sort of endear the public more towards cracking down. So in 1970, we got the Controlled Substances Act, because despite the fact that we have a lot of states that were decriminalizing around that time, we had a president who very much believed that marijuana was a public danger. And that was President Nixon.
Yeah. And if I'm correct, that's when cannabis became a Schedule I drug. We hear about that a lot, about why
That's right.
there are such restrictions against it. And you nodded to this at the beginning. You mentioned about the role of the LGBTQ community in beginning to the movement towards legalization. I think a lot of people may not be aware of that. What was most striking to you about your reporting on that aspect about legalization efforts?
So when we were brushing up to make this podcast in the first place, that whole story was complete news to me. I was way too young in 1996 to remember marijuana being legalized in the state of California. I couldn't tell you firsthand whether it was a big deal on my side of the country, on the East Coast. But learning about it, I was just struck by how different things were. I was struck by the fact that, you know, so much of this was influenced by the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And so you had LGBTQ communities in this country, but predominantly it was gay men that were the face of it, who were dying and wasting away. And some folks in these communities were advocating for access to marijuana as a medicine to treat HIV/AIDS. That's why it was legalized in California. That's why it was legalized in D.C., but it was delayed for a really long time. I think what's stunning about it is, you know, it tracks with the history of cannabis. It's a medicine that I think the advocates for it tend to be people who don't have access to the traditional medical system, who maybe are considered to be outcasted from society, like these men were at the time. And, you know, that access reflects a lot of other issues. I mean, these are people who were refused medical care in a lot of situations. And so this was a way for them to sort of take it upon themselves to ease their own suffering. So that was just, all of that was so surprising and heartbreaking to learn.
I'm speaking with Anne Marie Awad. She's host of On Something. It's a new podcast from Colorado Public Radio and PRX. Anne Marie, as we're thinking about history and how the war on drugs has historically hurt certain marginalized groups, communities of color, I found it really interesting to hear the stories of people who are dealing with criminal records for cannabis crimes and how that can continue to haunt them throughout their lives. And some of these stories come from Illinois, and you did some reporting here. What brought you here?
I was really intrigued by the law that Illinois had passed legalizing, because it was sort of ambitious as far as social equity goes. So I think maybe a lot of people have maybe heard this term over there, but social equity is kind of this approach to legalizing marijuana in a way that prioritizes those communities who might have been hit a lot harder by the war on drugs. These are predominantly Black, poor communities. And so I was really fascinated that this was something that more states were looking into doing. And I really wanted us to sort of find someone who is the face of this, like find a person who would be able to take advantage of this program and sort of find out what this might mean for them. What does this change for them?
So let's listen to a clip from this episode where you focus in on Illinois and we hear the story of Angelo Leslie. Can you tell us about his experience?
Yeah. So he's a young man. He grew up entirely in foster care, and he grew up without a real sense of stability in his life. And so at a very young age, he kind of turned to dealing drugs as a way to earn money, because he didn't have steady parents or family earning money to give him to support him. So he gets involved with selling drugs. He does get in trouble with the law a few times. He moves on to some larger crimes and then really gets into trouble. He ends up in prison for 3 years. And this is really sort of like the wake up call that turns his life around. And he gets out of prison and he says, you know, I want to go back home and I want to do things differently. Well, he begins applying for jobs and he can't get a foot in the door anywhere.
Yeah. And Anne Marie, I want to play a little clip. Let's listen to Angelo explaining what this was like. And we'll also hear the voice of WBZ reporter Natalie Moore, who you also spoke to for this episode.
I couldn't even get an interview. No.
Wow.
No. Even though I'm as knowledgeable as anybody in this industry about the industry.
We know that people who are released from prison have a hard time finding jobs. They have a hard time finding housing. They have a hard time reintegrating into society.
This is Natalie from WBEZ again.
And so he had a job and it was going well. And then his record came up and he wasn't able to keep that job anymore.
Right.
Unemployment is already high for Black men in the age range that Angelo is in. And if you put a conviction on top of that, it's really hard to find work, especially in the city.
That's a clip from the new podcast called On Something. My guest is Anne-Maria Wad. She's the host of that podcast from Colorado Public Radio and PRX. Anne-Marie, I mean, as you mentioned, so much of the talk leading up to legalization in Illinois was really focused on reparations, as you described, sort of making up for some of the harm that had been inflicted upon primarily communities of color throughout the war on drugs. I really wonder, you know, for people like Angelo, will he just described how hard it has been for him to get a job. Will he realistically be able to get a foothold in what is this $1 billion legal cannabis industry? And can you talk a little bit about what that entails?
So what the law does for him is it gets that most recent criminal sentence off of his record, which is a big head start. It allows him to kind of get in the door as far as investors go. But he is still facing some challenges there. There's still sort of the barrier of convincing those folks to invest in his business. So he was hoping to be up and running by now, from what I remember. And the idea was that he would kind of establish himself first, delivering kind of like tobacco products or CBD products. And then later on, he wanted to get in for the social equity program that would, I believe, give him a break on the application fees.
Yeah, and the social equity program, I understand, is for people who have a criminal record that is eligible for expungement under the Illinois law, and mostly for, I think, low-level cannabis crimes. Already, Governor Pritzker has pardoned, I believe, over 11,000 people on New Year's Eve with these low-level pot offenses. It's also for people who come from certain parts of the state that the state has identified as being hardest hit by the war on mm-hmm. drugs. Yeah.
Yeah, and we kind of go into it, and later in the episode, Natalie and I kind of talking about what goes into determining who is affected by the war on drugs. And, you know, will this law kind of make a meaningful impact for communities who were harmed by the war on drugs?
Right. And is that something you'll be paying attention to see if it has that effect? Because that's what kind of got your attention about Illinois' law, but it still kind of remains to be seen whether that will happen, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's something in other states like Massachusetts, for example. They have kind of programs that they're running that have similar goals to sort of give a leg up to people of color or low income people who come from these communities. And I have an eye on that. I have an eye on an equity program that's going on, I believe, in Oakland, California. So I'm really fascinated to see what the end results look like, because I think one of the reasons that we did the episode in the first place is social equity is one of those terms that can go over a lot of people's heads. And I think that there are a lot of really well-meaning people who do want to understand a lot more about racial inequity and about what folks are doing to solve it.
So, Anne-Marie, you mentioned Massachusetts, California doing things to address the social equity piece. How does Colorado compare to Illinois in terms of, are there differences with how reparations are addressed?
Oh, but we don't have them. I mean, that's the big difference. Colorado legalized something like 6 years ago, and it's just nowhere in that amendment that we voted on. I guess hindsight is 20/20. But I think part of why you see states like Illinois and Massachusetts really making a priority out of it is because Colorado has become something of an example of what happens if you don't. Which is to say that, you know, we have something like, I believe it's almost 500 pot businesses in the state, and something like only 2 licenses belong to Black people. We messed up. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's been interest in the legislature in the last couple of years in trying to pass a law to, in the very least, allow people to expunge these old low-level marijuana convictions. It didn't pass this past year, but another law that kind of helped did. And I think it's an issue that's getting taken up again this year. But it's really complex. I mean, I think when we did the whole episode about expungement, we learned that in some areas, really, it's kind of easier said than done. I mean, you talk about California state law, for example, that sort of automated the expunging of all of these criminal records on paper. But in practice, there wasn't really any sort of automation that existed. And so they had to turn, the individual cities had to turn to Code for America that created an algorithm for it. So I think it's one of those really interesting cases where we see interest in it, again, here in Colorado, but it's one of those things that is very difficult to implement.
Because it's just interesting to think about how if there are cannabis-related offenses in someone's past, and then now we move into a legal era, these things can actually still haunt them. I want to play one more piece of tape from an episode where you spoke to someone in Colorado. Her name's Casey. And she described what happened when she had been growing cannabis in her apartment and narcotics officers busted into her apartment. And here's a little clip from that episode.
They started walking into my bedroom and I said, "Hey, stop." They didn't stop. And that at that point, they found my little tiny grow in my bedroom.
What did that grow look like?
Oh, God, it was tiny. It was honestly really pitiful. It was a very much a beginner, just very under little fluorescent lights, just a little closet grow. So it was kind of just a curiosity and just, you know, I was young and I was just exploring.
For people who may not be aware of what it can be like to have a criminal record haunt you, like, what are the ways that actually affects their life going forward, even after they've served their time?
I'm so glad that you asked that, because I think one goal that we had with this episode was really to make people more thoughtful about just folks who are walking around with old criminal convictions for anything, not just marijuana. But I think it's really important for us to be thoughtful of how long these things really last. So if you get out of prison and you have something like that on your record, first of all, it depends on if you have a felony or a misdemeanor. Some things might be different, you know, depending on the conviction. But in some states, you can lose your right to vote if you have a felony conviction. In many states, it is not against the law for a landlord to discriminate against you if you're applying for an apartment and you have a felony conviction. It can lose you jobs because employers do have the right to ask about your criminal history. So, I mean, I think we spoke to somebody in California who is working on this issue, the head of the nonprofit called Cage Free Cannabis, and they are the ones that I believe are responsible for National Expungement Week. And when we spoke, he said that they had identified upwards of like hundreds of interactions that a criminal conviction could have with housing, with employment, with any other type of service that you need to get from the government. The woman that you had heard from was in school at the time that her arrest happened. And she was terrified for the rest of her time there that her school would find out about her conviction and kick her out and disqualify her for aid. I just don't think people out there really realize how easy it is for a felony conviction to change the course of your life permanently.
That's Anne-Marie Awad. She's host of the new podcast. It's called On Something from Colorado Public Radio and PRX. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation with Anne-Marie. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Christine Herman. My guest is Anne-Marie Awad. Her new podcast from Colorado Public Radio is called On Something. It's all about life after legalization of cannabis. This month, Illinois became the 11th state to legalize recreational cannabis, so we thought it would be great to check in with Anne-Marie and learn about her podcast, get a sense of what we can expect here in Illinois based on how things have played out in states like Colorado. Anne-Marie, in your podcast, there's an episode where you speak with a man, Neil Pollack. He's a writer, and in 2018, he wrote an op-ed for the New York Times called, "I'm Just a Middle-Aged House Dad Addicted to Pot." What made you want to talk to him?
So essentially, you know, it was surprising to read this piece and see that somebody who basically had all the appearances outwardly of being like a successful career author, humorist, was really struggling with something that I didn't even know could be pernicious. I mean, I'm pretty forthcoming on the podcast that I'm a marijuana user myself. I'm a daily marijuana user. And I think reading about how hard it was for him to cope with marijuana addiction, I think I just was really fascinated to know more. But I think, again, it was a reason that we included it on the podcast. I think it was really important for anyone out there who might be suffering through the same thing to know that they're not alone.
So, Anne-Marie, in this episode, speaking with Neil Pollack, you get into his story. He's talking, explaining to you how he was getting high all the time. It was hurting his relationships, but he eventually found his way to a marijuana anonymous group. Let's listen to a clip of Neil Pollack describing to you what that was like.
The hard part was just taking a good long look at myself, you know?
What did that involve?
Just recognizing that I'd lived my life as sort of a entitled hipster. And I had just been so arrogant and so egotistical and so self-absorbed for so long that I'd really damaged the relationships in my life that mattered to me. and I'd made everything about me, and I'd made everything about my bottomless pit of needs and desires.
Did you quit cold turkey?
Yes. The day I quit was the last time I got high. And, you know, I miss it. I miss it every day, frankly.
Yeah?
Yeah, of course. It was, you know, it's fun to get high. People don't do it because it feels bad.
Right.
You know, and tastes good to me and smells good to me.
That's writer Neil Pollack speaking with Anne-Marie Awad. To hear more of his story, you can listen to the new podcast On Something. Season one is out. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Anne-Marie, his story was really fascinating. And it is just interesting to hear that the idea that cannabis can be addictive is hotly debated, even though it is in the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. There's a federal agency that cites data suggesting that about 30% of people who use marijuana may have some degree of marijuana use disorder, and that people who, especially people who begin using before age 18, are more likely to develop this as an adult. Do we know whether these issues increase once legalization happens? Is that something that you saw in Colorado over the past 6 years?
I'm not really sure if there's data on that yet, like measuring it since legalization. I know it's a concern. I know that a lot of advocacy groups are maybe against legalization in the beginning, have really raised a lot of alarm bells about dependency, about potency in particular, and just generally about how legalization tends to affect the culture. So I think something that we get a dig on a lot here in Denver is there's a lot of dispensaries.
Yeah.
Legal weed is now a pretty big part of life here. And because we kind of had those learning experiences like, hey, oh, maybe we want to limit the number of dispensaries that it can open up in any one given area. Whoops. I guess I hope we thought about that at the time. But because of that, I think that legalization is sort of part of Denver's cultural identity in a way that maybe some people are not the biggest fan of, but I think it's true nonetheless. And there's real concerns that a person who is struggling with substance dependency would have a hard time in a place like Denver where they can smell weed out in the street in a lot of places. Or, you know, there are streets like South Broadway where you can walk down and there's, you know, dispensary here, dispensary there, dispensary over there. So I think that there's a real concern that it will contribute to dependency, but I don't know if anybody's measuring it.
There's another episode where you get into another really fascinating aspect of cannabis legalization that I will say I had not heard of prior to listening. This idea of cannabis churches. I mean, without giving away what this episode's all about, can you give us a little bit of a teaser? Cannabis in churches?
So this is like a really great example of what I mean when I say that it's sort of infiltrated the culture a bit. Is that a couple years ago, a pot church opened up here in Denver. There were tons of stories about it. It was like national news for a hot second. And I think it was something that was very easy to look at and not take very seriously. But what we wanted to do was not only take it seriously, but sort of understand how and why somebody would use marijuana as a part of their spiritual process. And surprisingly to me, I mean, a lot of what we heard in the episode made a lot more sense, I think, than I expected it to, as just a non-religious person myself. So I'm still mystified that we were able to even do the episode. I think I had a hard time convincing a lot of folks on this one. But I'm really glad we did it, because I think it's one that we still get a lot of feedback about. I think a lot of folks like you didn't really know that this was a thing. And I think it's increasingly a thing. I mean, there are reasons people do this kind of thing, whether it's to gather or in the case of there's a pot church in Indiana to protest. But, you know, all aspects of legalization, we kind of want to try to take seriously and explain it for the folks who might not get it.
Yeah. And there are many serious aspects of legalization that you get into, including one that, again, was not aware of this when you dive into it in your episode where you tell a love story. And we don't have to get into all the details of the love story, but it highlighted some issues that people may not be aware of regarding what cannabis legalization means for people who are not U.S. citizens. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think even before we did this podcast, one thing that was really surprising for me to learn as a reporter and something that I've really kind of made it my mission to get the word out about is that no matter where you are in the United States, cannabis is not legal for you if you are not a citizen. And it's, there's no gray area. If you are a legal resident, it is still not legal for you. And I think it was really important for us to do a story about that, mostly as a public service announcement. But I think a large part of it, too, was to show that things are this way, like this sort of quirk exists, because this is the immigration system that we've had for quite some time in this country. And here's how it works. And unfortunately, the love story that we tell in that episode ends up being kind of a case study in what happens when a regular upstanding person from another country comes and visits the United States and samples some legal cannabis.
So you also dive into CBD and a lot of the hype around it, especially in the wellness world. Okay, so to start off, can you first give us a real quick explainer about the difference between CBD and THC, which are both derived from cannabis plants?
Okay. So THC is, I guess, for lack of a better term, the fun stuff. It's the part that gets you high. It is the part that can be responsible for paranoia and anxiety. CBD is sort of the interlocking puzzle piece that goes with THC, and it's responsible for the relaxation aspect of marijuana. And so although it's only been approved by the FDA for a certain very few, very limited purposes, it is everywhere all over the supermarket shelves for whatever reason you can even think of. The big reason that we wanted to kind of tackle that was to explain to people kind of where can you, if you're looking to try CBD, sort of where should you be looking for it? What is out there on the market? What do you need to know about it? How is it regulated? Is it regulated at all?
You describe it as like the new kale, the new superfood. And you talk to people in Denver. I understand you were at a TEDx event and you just kind of asked them their thoughts on CBD. Let's take a listen to some of what people shared with you.
I'm a big fan of CBD. I use CBD frequently, especially when I'm trying to get some deep sleep.
There are people who I've known in my life, like my piano teacher, who are now rallying in Texas for this usage because of the medical, like the medicinal use.
I mean, I know that it has like healing properties, but I'm not like all up on all the data.
Oh yeah, I saw it in Walgreens looking next to the cough syrup I was going to get for my kids. So my kids were sick and it was just right next to them, and I was like, CBD? Thought this was a dispensary thing, but I guess it's everywhere.
Those are people in Denver speaking with Anne-Marie Awad, who is the host of the new podcast On Something from Colorado Public Radio and PRX. I mean, Anne-Marie, I mean, what are, I guess, the basics that people should know when they're seeing the CBD in the coffee shops or in Walgreens or whatever, and hearing all this hype and marketing? What do you tell people if they're like, hey, is that worth it? Should I pay the extra money to get those drops in my coffee?
So what I tell people is that more often than not, what you're getting is hemp extract. And hemp extract is not necessarily the same thing as CBD.
And that's why you can get it at not just exactly at dispensaries. You can get it
right
in lots of places.
We kind of tried to explain this on the podcast because it really does. It is responsible for kind of what is available where. But essentially, the 2018 Farm Bill legalized hemp everywhere in the United States. And so CBD is something that can be isolated from hemp and from cannabis. The differences between these plants is that cannabis has THC. It has the party
the psychoactive component.
Yeah. Or the more adult name for it. Yes. So that is the big difference. So the CBD that's made from hemp contains no THC whatsoever, or very little THC. And there is some evidence out there that suggests that CBD is not really effective unless it has at least a little bit of THC to activate it.
And then depending on the dose, too, right?
It depends on the dose. Mm-hmm. I mean, the tough thing, too, is that the FDA has sort of sat this out. And so a lot of these CBD brands were able to become really big and prolific in this time where there was sort of a regulation vacuum.
Yeah.
So there isn't really like a testing requirement.
It's sort of like
FDA
other
has.
Supplements that are out there. They're not
exactly
regulated by the FDA in the same way that FDA approved drugs are.
I have found that the most helpful way to tell people to look at it is sort of look at them as supplements and sort of take them as a grain of salt. And so hey, I buy supplements. I mean, it's not like don't try it. It's probably not going to hurt you. I think something that we were very clear about in the episode is that if you are on any regular medication, you should talk to a doctor about using CBD because it could interact negatively. But other than that, thinking about it as a supplement is a great way to go about it. There are lots of things out there on the market that are not 100% regulated by the FDA, but folks are going to try them to see if it works for them. I'm sure folks, there are people out there listening to this who drink those little mushroom coffees every morning or take like an herbal remedy capsule at night. Just because the FDA hasn't weighed in on it, it doesn't mean that there's not any legitimacy, but there's a lot of noise to wade through.
I'm going to have to go Google mushroom coffee because I hadn't heard of that one either.
Oh, I mean, I do also live in Denver where we're just, we're like a hippy dippy capital. So I feel like I have a false impression of how hippy dippy everybody else is.
So there's so much more you get into on this podcast, so I encourage people to check it out. It's called On Something from Colorado Public Radio and PRX. You also look at some of the environmental costs of cannabis cultivation. You explore how legalization of recreational cannabis affects medical cannabis patients, and those are all topics that we also hope to touch on upcoming episodes of the 21st, so hope you'll stay tuned for that. What can people expect from season two, which I understand is coming out in March?
Yes. So there we've been hard at work and we're looking at a whole different set of issues this season. So we've begun work on an episode that's sort of exploring moms using marijuana while they're pregnant and sort of the conflicting science around that, the different sort of perceptions around that, and what happens to moms who find themselves in this situation when it comes to criminal consequences.
Wow.
We have myself and my arts reporter are kind of working on a pitch right now about weed and creativity. This is kind of another science-based one that should be a lot of fun, but sort of getting to the bottom of whether or not marijuana really makes somebody more creative.
How can people get in touch if they have questions or ideas for the show?
Oh, yes. You can follow us on Twitter at onsomethingpod. We are also highly reachable over email. It's humans@onsomething.org.
We'll tweet out all that information and have it available at our website, 21stshow.org. Again, Anne-Marie, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much. It was fun.
That's all the time we have for today. You can follow us on Twitter. Just search for 21ST Show. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. On our Facebook page, just search for the 21st to like us. You can comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you want us to ask on air. All of those links, every other way to contact us, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, or follow us at social media, just go to our website, 21stshow.org. I'm Christine Herman. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks so much for listening.